this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
I'm waiting on you to start.
You're blocking my shot here, man. All right.
You're doing the viewers a favor here.
Hey, guys. welcome back to this episode of Y'allitics. We're back at one of my favorite places. This is Manhattan Project Beer Company on the west side of the Dallas skyline.
Yes.
Excellent place.
And right behind the big post office.
It is right behind the big post office.
If you know where that's at.
And we have with us this week, you won't recognize them from Texas politics or from national politics, but they cover politics in Germany. Mm-hmm. We have two television correspondents with us who cover politics there. They're here visiting for 2 weeks, going across the country, and we wanted to have them on to talk about what things are like here, what you're seeing here, and obviously with what we're doing here in the U.S. Is having a huge impact there.
It's always fascinating to see it through a different lens.
Absolutely. You know? That's what we want this episode to be. Victoria Insenauer,
Right.
Is that close?
Wow. Yes, that's good.
She works for RTL. It's a private network in Frankfurt. And Daniel, you pronounce your last name correctly.
Frevel.
Frevel.
That's a very German pronunciation.
You did a great job. Thank you so much.
And he's with who?
He's a reporter and moderator with Tagesschau. ARD, also in Hamburg. And we say Hamburg here. I don't know why we say Hamburg, but it's Hamburg, right?
It's Hamburg. It's correct,
Hamburg,
actually.
It is.
But I think
Germany,
all the Americans Hamburg. Just think about the hamburgers, so they say
yes.
Hamburg.
So you had it opposite.
We were right.
And Tagesschau is like the daily news show everyone consumes in Germany.
It's like
at 8 o'clock, you cannot call anyone. Everyone's consuming.
Yeah,
the Tagesschau
is a big thing. We still have like 11 or 12 million people watching each night. So with a population of 80 million, you can imagine that the country comes together, and it's like
it's like Ron Burgundy, huh?
A bit, yeah. Or Walter
Everyone stops.
Wait, so before we get into this, how do you maintain that? Because we've seen such a fracturing of the media landscape here in the United States. People sort of go to their own silos. There's a lot of cable news that, you know, leans one way or the other. How do you keep that many people still gathering around a TV set for appointment viewing?
That's a good question for a big research, I think. Yeah. But I think it's partly because it's very, very moderate. It's very...
In the middle, I guess.
It's very in the middle, and it's all about news. There's not a commentary there. It's very... put together, it's only 15 minutes each day, so it's very short. And like, you grow up watching it. In the evening at 8 p.m., everyone gathers in front of the TV and everyone watches it. Your grandmother does it, your father does it, you watch it. And it's funny because now I have friends who are like 21 or something like that, and they even watch it because they say, you're constantly online. You have all this news all day that you could consume, and that's so overwhelming. And you get all this negative stuff that you watch on Instagram and stuff. So many people do digital detox, and they just watch this 15 minutes a day.
Wow.
And you get a good overview.
Wow,
but
that's
now
extraordinary.
As we made so, or as I made so much advertisement about the talk show, I also have to shed light on
TV Victoria,
program,
so you can stay. Yes.
Which is RTL Aktuell. It's also a daily, very big news program covering every news in Germany and all over the world. And I would say it's a little bit more... For the people, more what they feel, what they think like, or maybe some other topics that consider their daily life. But all in all, it's similar.
And what is very hard news. It's very...
Yeah. And one observation I had about just seeing German television, and you guys have mentioned it as well, it's very formal. It's very, you know, it's very buttoned up. It's not like
today we saw your news show and they are like singing and maybe it's a little drama when they're showing the weather news. You have more lights, everything is more colorful.
It's very
we could use a little bit of that.
So you guys are here on a 2-week program and you spent a week in Washington D.C. And we'll get into what you saw there, because you guys went to the Heritage Foundation. You guys saw a lot of stuff there. But let's talk for a moment about Texas, because you've been here. My colleague Dan Godwin from the Fox station here in Dallas, he and I took you out. Shout out to Dan.
He's a very nice guy.
But so we went to the stockyards in Fort Worth to see the cattle drive. Mm-hmm. We had barbecue. And then, Victoria, tell them what we did yesterday.
No, I want to stay with Stockyards because there I did some rodeo riding.
She did.
She did the mechanical bull.
Rodeo. Wow.
Fantastic. Yeah. Maybe
how long did you last?
Actually,
the whole time
I didn't fall off until okay. I said stop.
That's yeah. legit.
I also did some rodeo, but it looked a bit differently. I don't know if you can edit the video in it,
but he wanted
but it's
to
really
talk
funny.
About
oh,
it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Different
it's
rodeo.
Harder than it looks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's harder than it looks.
But
yeah.
the other thing they got to do, and I hear from a lot of folks, and we won't get into any of the details, but we went to the gun range because
oh, yeah.
That's a very, I don't want to say it's a Texas thing, but it's a very
it
American
is,
thing with
yeah.
the Second Amendment. So that was... neat to see, and shout out to my friends at Eagle Gun Range, David Prince, who owns that.
But it's interesting to see it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And you did a great job. You shot small things and big things, and you did not shy away from it.
Victoria, but it sounds like you had quite a day.
I saw a lot of interesting things. This is how I would say it.
Go ahead, Daniel.
No, I was just about to say that it's very interesting because it's such a big part of American identity. And
sure.
It's so far away from everything you would feel like as a German, I would say, nowadays, luckily. And so it's a fascination a bit to see that it's such a normal thing here. And also, I think it's always a huge debate when something happens in the US with mass shootings or something. We always wonder like, yeah, but why is it so easy to get guns here? And we don't have those drastic problems at home with those high numbers and stuff. So it's also a debate in German politics when we cover the US that we wonder, okay, why is this such an important right for them? Why do they value it so much? And I think being here and talking to people, you understand it a little more where it's coming from, what historical roots it has. And that's very interesting.
There you also see where my reaction comes from.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
in Germany, we have a difficult relation to weapons. We don't want to be so close to weapons. When we see them, when we see military, it's always, we try to go away, and because of our history, it's not like here that you are very proud when you see something.
Although
like
there is
this.
A large chunk of the population here that feels similarly, and that's why the debate just rages.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the headlines, because the German politics doesn't necessarily make U.S. news all the time. But I was shocked.
Oh, since Donald Trump, we do it like every day.
Yeah,
as recently.
But,
yeah.
But U.S. politics makes German news all the time. And the most recent thing is Donald Trump, President Trump's push to get a peace plan in Ukraine. On the surface, that sounds like it's a pretty good idea. I guess everyone wants peace over there. And with Ukraine, where it's located not far from Germany, what's the reaction to this, to the new president's idea for peace over there? Everyone welcoming it, or are people thinking it's not going to happen, or what?
I mean, it's been on the horizon quite a time now. He already told, like, months before that that's his plan, and he will have a deal in 24 hours, or what was it? Like,
yep.
So
first
everyone already wondered, okay, how is that going to look like? And then I think there was a huge phase of shock in Germany with everything we saw playing out in the Oval Office. President Zelensky, a Western leader, the one who is, from a German perspective, standing up for whole of Europe. It's not about Ukraine, it's about Europe. And he is the one defending his country, but also the European border in a way, not EU border,
sure.
but still. And seeing this person just being shouted at in the Oval Office, something that we've never seen in international relations happen between friends and allies, that changed a lot in Germany. I think many Americans don't really grasp how strong that sentiment was in Germany when we saw that, and how much this changed. The whole debate changed, policies changed because of this event in the Oval Office. And it wasn't just a small thing that just happened and the next day we continue with what we've done before. It's been a big shift.
And the quick context on that, I'm sorry, Victoria. The quick context is, ever since World War II, Europe has always kind of relied on the U.S. as big brother in case something happens to defend Europe. And now you see this Western president, Donald Trump, saying we're not really interested in supporting that democracy in Ukraine. At least that's how it's perceived in a lot of places.
I totally agree with what Daniel said. And peace, yeah, everyone wants peace. But the question is always under what conditions? Because we can say Russia was the aggressor, is the aggressor, and attacked the Ukraine. So
we all saw that on TV.
Yeah, that's what happened. That's what happened.
Yeah. We cannot allow anyone to say, okay, it's okay to attack a country. Like, our danger is always what will happen if this works now. What will have to happen after it? So we always have like a long view in the future, I would say. And because the U.S. Goes away from the like military aid, and now they said they would do it again. But we know that we have to, or Germany and the E.U. has to just pay more money on their own, and they knew it. Also, not since Zelensky was in the White House. They knew it before. They knew it like years and years back then. But now I think everyone really knows how serious it is.
Yeah, there's a huge change that's underway in Europe right now, where there's a discussion about spending tremendous amounts of money by European standards to create European defense and to kind of go it in the world like, you know, maybe you can't count on the United States anymore. And a lot of countries there, it seems like this has united a lot of Europe in coming together to say, hey, we've got to ramp up our weapons production. We've got to ramp up, you know, how much, you know, we spend on defense. And there's even talk about creating sort of your own European nuclear umbrella, you know, with France offering to sort of, you know, lend its nuclear weapons to be able to protect Europe in case of an invasion from Russia. This is stuff that we haven't heard for many,
never
many years.
Before.
We haven't heard this sort
of
thing.
And this is because of Donald Trump. And the EU von der Leyen, she said, now we gave $500 billion for defense. But of course, this will not, and this is also, it will take time. So we need to react now and cannot wait longer.
I think as cynical as it sounds, the way it has played out, only because of that, it had this gravitas. That's what I think. Also that change is like the announcement that they came so quickly and huge numbers. It's not true in Germany, but in Germany alone, we always had this debt block. So we didn't take any state debts in the last
debt break.
In the last years. And after this meeting in the Oval Office, the new forming coalition in Germany, they announced that they will take an unlimited amount of debt for military spending. Mm. That's huge in Germany. Mm. That we had this term before, Zeitenwende, with Kanzler Scholz preparing Germany for helping Ukraine in this war against Russia. And this is, I think, a complete new Zeitenwende in a way.
Yeah.
But the style and how it was done, I think that shattered a lot in the international relations, in the transatlantic relations. You could have done it differently. Mm-hmm. And like already seeing Pete Hegseth coming to Brussels to his first NATO meeting, already there, out of nothing, announcing that, yeah, you can forget Crimea, you can forget the eastern territories of Ukraine. And there was no talks happening. He just did that out of nothing.
And everyone was like, and then he went to Munich in your country and essentially lectured European leaders and had some pretty terse talks there as well.
Absolutely. And everyone wondered, okay, if you want to really make a good deal, why do you already take some things off the table beforehand, before you start to make the deal? So I think, that's... Yes, it has an impact. Yes, the impact is quite huge. It needs time, as Victoria said, and the way it was done, it shattered a lot, I think. Mm.
How big is the concern in Germany among German citizens that Vladimir Putin might invade another country? That's kind of the underlying thing here. Are Germans really concerned about that, or do they think this is just all about Putin trying to reassemble the old part of the old Soviet Union?
No, they are really concerned about it. They think, like, how will my daily life will be affected? And I think they take it really serious. And I know a lot of people after Zelensky was in the White House, a lot of people were like, okay, I cannot consume media anymore. I'm very shocked and I'm much afraid. Mm.
I think since the outset of this war, since Russia invaded Ukraine, it was clear that for Putin, Ukraine is a test balloon. Mm. It's a way to see how will they react. Can I just invade this country and it's mine, or will there be a huge backlash? It's not a NATO member, it's not an EU member, so it was like a test balloon on the outskirts of Europe. And that's why there was such a big support. That's why there were like billions of military spending to help this country defend itself. And to just have a deal now, I think there will be a deal, of course, but this will not be the end. And the cheaper, in brackets, the cheaper this deal is, I think the sooner we will see something else happening.
And from Putin.
From Putin. And I think many people in Germany and huge parts of Europe, they are afraid of this.
Yeah, there are a lot of arguments in this country that if that happens, you know, then those wars over there do become our wars here in the United
right.
States. If we ignore what's happening now and let that just, you know, play out however it plays out, that we may be much more involved with the next country that Putin could invade. I'm curious what the perceptions are over there, not of Donald Trump or his administration, but of Americans in general, because in this country there's a tremendous disagreement over Trump administration policies. There is a lot of polarization in this country. You know, it was almost 50-50 in the election. Mm-hmm. What are people's perceptions in your country of Americans right now?
I think it's exactly that we see a hugely polarized country. I think that's what we also understood, that it's half of the country, that only margins did make the difference in the end. But since Donald Trump took office, I think the sentiment in Germany is often, where are the Democrats? Where is the opposition?
The US Democrats.
The US Democrats. Yeah. Where is the other voice, so to say? And in this rampant speed that Donald Trump had, like we also report about it in our news, of course, I think American journalists are already a bit better in separating what news are really important and what's just the noise, so to say. I think we still have to figure that out sometimes. Mm. And basically everything he puts on Truth Social is already in use. In that speed, there's no, that at least from a German perspective, seems to be no power that just says, no, it's different, no, look, there's a different way to see it. And when I do a political report in Germany, I always have, of course, the
other side.
You always show the opposition. The other spectrum, and that's completely missing in the moment in US coverage in Germany, I think.
Mm. Yeah, and I think a lot of Germans, when they see American media, they see this big media polarization that everyone just consumes what they believe and what they think, and they are afraid that this is happening in Germany as well. It's not right now, but there's a tendency to it.
Mm. Of course, politics isn't part of that polarization. We're completely down the middle in the spectrum there.
We try to actually have conversations about things, which you don't see enough of, I think.
But that's so good, because that's so missing, I think, just to have a common ground and to create this common ground again.
Instead of soundbites.
Yeah, but if everyone is in their bubble, it's more difficult that people talk to each other. Right. And just also the most dangerous fact is if we cannot einigen... we cannot agree on the basic facts, if everyone has different facts, like the blue, the sky is blue or the sky is red, then how will the discussion develop?
Sure. Yeah,
that's a great point.
No, that's a fantastic point. And for the Texans watching and listening to this episode, why does it matter in Texas? Well, there's a lot of Texas businesses that trade with Germany and that trade with different countries in Europe. Germany for Texas alone, I believe, is in the top 10 trading partners. I believe it's eighth or ninth trading partner, and it's like $9 billion in goods that we send over there. $9 billion makes a huge bottom line for Texas businesses,
and we have so much history together. So
absolutely, and
stick to that.
The other big news that we're hearing about right now from Elon Musk and from a senator in the United States is talking about the U.S. should abandon NATO. We should walk out of NATO.
And the United Nations.
And the United Nations. Yeah. And NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, it's the defense shield for all of us, essentially. And Article 5 says if one person's attacked, we're all attacked. Mm-hmm. That's why Ukraine wanted to be inside NATO so much to get that assistance. What would happen, though, if the U.S. left NATO? Where would that leave Europe?
It's a big question.
You can ask about Europe, but you can ask about yourself as well. I think that's so short-sighted to say, well, NATO just helps the Europeans, we just pay for the Europeans. Yes, it needs to be a more equal payment for NATO, but in the end, Europe is also the defense where for the US. I mean, when you look at where you can put ballistic missiles, and when Putin is there, it will be a problem for the United States.
Also air bases.
As well, air bases. It's a huge infrastructure. It's like not talking about values. That's a whole different topic that we are friends because of our democratic values and liberal democracies. But just from a mere defense perspective, I'm not an expert, but I think it just makes sense to have a huge alliance there. Also, when you look at China, because that's what we're seeing now at Munich's Security Conference, where J.D. Vance did this huge speech. The vice president did this huge speech. And then what you heard from the people on the ground, they were like, yeah, and China was very friendly, was present. They, of course, have their diplomatic ties into Europe. In Eastern Europe, China heavily invested. So if you really want to have an eye on that and be a strong force that, just keep China in mind. Europe is not all about Russia and Europe, it's also about China. I think it's in the US interest to support that anymore. But one thing I have to say is this notion of Article 5, even if the US stays in NATO, after all this back and forth that we were seeing, there is a sentiment in Germany and in Western Europe that Article 5 is already dead. If you have a president in power who does this one day, then does this the other day, there's no clear strategy, and he always questions those big institutions, will you be sure that he will press the button when it's really on the verge of
catastrophe.
If Europe was attacked, there's not
you might not depend
in
on
your
us.
Minds that you could depend on the U.S.
That's what some people think.
Yeah.
I think there's this psychological dimension to it, and this public psychological dimension. If you are sure, if you have a leader of the free world in the U.S. that has a clear strategy, where you know this is a strategy, this is what we can rely on, this is what we can work with, but that's not the case with Donald Trump. It's chaos. And there's no feeling of, okay, we are really safe. So that's why it's, I think, going so fast that that Europe understood, okay, we have to really hurry up now.
It's important to note, too, that NATO, this extends, as you were touching on, it extends the reach of the United States across the globe, because you have those bases and those alliances all around the world. We don't have to, get everything going here in case of a conflict overseas and then ship everything over. We've got things pre-positioned. And we have to remember that these are institutions, these are frameworks that the United States built. NATO, the United Nations, the International Monetary Fund. We put a lot of this infrastructure in place, and you could argue as a historian that nobody has benefited from all of those institutions more than the richest country in the world, the United States.
Yeah, but also it's interesting that when you look at this history, you always had a lot of people in Germany, and I think in Europe as well, that would be very critic with the US, criticizing why they're building up these institutions, and they got bigger and bigger. And now we are in this position where the EU is so alarmed, and now a lot of people see how important that is. And this trend, or this made a shift also in German politics, when we come back a little bit to German politics. For example, for the Green Party, they always were no weapons and we need peace. And now the Green Party actually wants more money for defense than the CDU, the conservative party.
Wow. Yeah. And y'all seen a surge.
They see a big shift.
You've seen a surge as well, though, in the far right in Germany and in German politics recently.
Yeah, well, let's get into that. I was going to ask about that next. It's what's happening here, like Jason said, is really mirrored with what's happening in Germany as well. When I was there a couple of years ago, it's the AfD, the Alternative for Deutschland, is the name of the party. Very conservative party. It might mirror the Republican Party in the U.S.
So it's a MAGA movement.
I don't think it's that easy to say that they are similar because the parliamentary system in Germany is a little bit different. You have the two-party system, and we have way more parties, so they can make more politics for their clientele. For their clients. They can differ more from each other. Mm-hmm. And you see some similarities with the Republicans and the CDU and the Liberals in Germany, but also with the AfD. So it's not that easy to say that they are that similar. Of course, we have the same reasons, like immigration and prices that go up and people that maybe lose their wealth. So these are reasons why people vote the AfD also, but...
That's interesting because it's so similar here. I think Americans tend to only look at themselves a lot and not pay attention to the rest of the world. The rest of the world has also been roiled by inflation and immigration. It's these same issues, just different countries.
True. I think the AfD is also like the Republicans and very Eurosceptical party, and they want to say like stop immigration. We cannot, even though we need migrants for our system. Right now it doesn't work. We don't have enough staff in our hospital, etc.
And the German economy is huge.
Yeah,
it's the biggest in Europe by far.
Yeah,
and also that like the AfD as well as the Republicans say the state should be very minimal and give more rights to like freedom, liberal views. I would say.
But like Jason said though, the AfD is still rising in influence. I mean, the 2 years ago when I was there, all the other parties were like, well, we're not going to work with them. We're not going to create a coalition with them. Yeah. And now that's changing.
The AfD was founded in 2013. And in the beginning, it was a Euroskeptical like financial party because of the financial crisis in Greece.
Yeah.
But then the far right people, they were getting stronger and stronger. And before it was like a right wing.
Sure.
But now it got bigger and bigger, and the people from the beginning actually left the party. And in the last election, the AfD made 20%, so it was on the second place. But the CDU, they would always say, we will not correlate with them together.
The CDU is the big party.
They wanted to be bigger. They wanted to make 30%. They didn't do that. It was 28%, but still they are big.
And 28% of the Congress, right? The Bundestag?
The Bundestag, the parliament, And the AfD is always like, oh, you're copying our ideas. We should go together. But the CDU says, no, we would never correlate with you together. Mm. But there was an incident a couple of weeks ago in the parliament with a debate where they were voting for a five-point plan together from the CDU. And that created big debates and protests in all of the state because the people on the streets were like, okay, this is the start. Maybe they will eventually correlate with them together, and everyone was afraid of that. They still say they won't do it. Yeah, but this is the big question.
I think, too, though, aren't people, since they watch American politics so much and they've seen the rapidity of change that has come with a change of administrations, it's almost like people in other countries who are paying attention to that can say, oh, now we know what to look for in the beginning or before we get to that change.
Exactly.
And so maybe they're a little bit more on guard. I mean,
in an ideal world, I think that would be the case, to be prepared a bit.
For people who don't want that kind of change.
Absolutely. And who see that AfD is watching the Republican Party and writing everything down and trying to mimic certain things. As you said, it's been quite a surge, but still there is this sentiment that you don't work together with them. And after this huge backlash where they just did one vote together with the CDU, I think they realized, okay, we have to form a stable coalition in order to not be forced to vote for them. And I think there's this this sentiment that I also heard it from some colleagues, okay, let's wait, in 4 years they will have more and more. And I think it's one has to be a bit careful about that, because it's not like a natural phenomenon that is just happening. It's people behind this number voting for this party. And I think there's, in Germany at least, there's only like it's changing, of course, but there's only a set potential for this party to gain grounds, because Germany has a strong democratic back, I would say. Mm-hmm. And there were so many people on the streets. And if you look at the majority of the parties there that were voted, 80% are democratic parties that don't fall in this in line with
AfD. But still, 20% is a lot.
And still 20%. And the question is, how do we, what do we do with it? And one strategy is, of course, to say, okay, apparently what they are saying is something that moves a lot of people, so we have to say the same. Mm-hmm. And we have to do the same policies. That's what some people would say the CDU did. They just took elements of that. And
that's common, yeah.
Yeah, but it didn't work.
In their program. Okay. And it didn't work for them. And I think to understand it, there's still a certain amount of AfD voters who vote because they are not happy with the political system, the political way the coalitions before worked. And I think there's potential to get voters back there, not by just the right-wing positions, but by mimicking them, but by providing good political solutions to problems. So I think it's not a way, but that's just my personal opinion, to just mimic the right and try to get them on the way, because that doesn't work. I think they should try harder to really provide accurate solutions for the problems of the people.
Maybe if I can add something. The CDU, you know, Angela Merkel, it used to be very center, strong economy, maybe like a tougher stance on migrants than the SPD, the Social Democrats, tax relief. But now, after Angela Merkel, now the new chancellor will be Friedrich Merz. And he's more...
Friedrich Merz.
Am I on the spot here?
Friedrich Merz. What is Friedrich Merz.
Friedrich Merz. He's way more conservative and a little bit more lean to the right. And this is what he tried in the election campaign, like to be very aggressive, I would say. And with me, everything will be better. And when you see how many votes did the CDU gain from the AfD, you see, no, none vote. No one that who voted the AfD before came to the CDU afterwards. Mm-hmm. So,
There's some lessons there for the next election.
So he actually probably made the AfD even stronger because... he just gave them so much opportunity for their own narratives.
I want to ask you all about your trip here to the United States. So as Jason was saying, y'all have been here in Texas for about a week. Before that, you were in Washington, D.C. You all have a great setup there in Germany, because these two are going back home after this two-week trip, and both of you are still off for the rest of March, is it?
Not the whole March, but I still have a week off of vacation here that I will spend in New York City.
Same here.
Oh, nice. Like Jason's,
y'all are on
like
a white lace schedule, I was going to say.
You got to relax sometimes.
Sounds great. We need to learn
if
from
If we
you
are
guys.
Here, then we have to use it. Use our time.
See this country.
So as you've been seeing this country, eventually when you do, you know, head back to work, when you get back to Germany, what could you tell your viewers in Germany about your perceptions of America, of Americans, of Texans, of Texas? I don't know. Have you gained anything, any different perspectives than what you had before by coming here?
So for me, it's always important to talk to everyone. And I know it's very easy when we see again something on the news about Donald Trump administration to say, oh, they are so crazy, they are lost, but it's not like that. I see hope. I see that everyone's very politely and very respectful, and you can still talk to each other and have a basic ground of knowledge. So what I take for the German media system is that we need to be careful that we don't have this media polarization. So just show a lot of perspectives, talk to a lot of people, talk to or show how policies affect people in their daily life, and not only talk with politicians on the highest level, but talk to the people and how everything's affected. And you should not leave out any opinions or topics. We just should just talk about it. And I think we are closer to each other than we think.
That's a very very good summary.
Try to give some hope.
Yeah, really good. Jeez. No, I feel the same. Like, of course, the contrast is very interesting. We landed in Washington, D.C. We met with all those people from the Capitol and talked about politics and stuff. And now, finally, some real America here. I feel like it was so great to be in Texas, to be in Dallas, to talk to some normal people, so to say. And to understand how huge this country is, and that you have states who are completely red, completely blue, and that if you're at one point and you get an impression of the people you talk to on the streets, it will not mean anything about the whole country.
Yes.
And to just to understand that from a journalistic perspective, was, I mean, it's a simple thought, but it was still great to understand
just
that.
Just see how different the country is. I mean, we've been to Washington. We will be in Philadelphia and New York City this week, and we're now in Texas. And
oh, that'll give you a whole different taste.
Yeah.
For us, we would never say, oh, the Italians are like the Germans or like the Finns. We all have a common basis, but everyone is different. Everyone has a different climate. Everyone has different houses. So
I want to end on something strong here. My last question. See, I gave them.
Oh,
wow. I gave them a hint here. I said,
but we lasted quite long.
I'll warn you. His last question is usually 4 parts.
I have so many more notes.
Okay. Do you have more notes? So here's the trick. I told them. I said, Wheeler talks a lot, so I will always give him a cue that I'm wrapping things up by saying my last question.
So and then he has three follow-ons.
Now your listeners know it as well. It's your secret.
I want to end strong on something here, too, because there's a lot of people who are not Donald Trump fans, who are opponents of him, many Democrats, who say the U.S. right now is like Germany 1936.
Ooh.
When you hear that and you see what's going on here, what do you think?
I think from my personal perspective, I'm always very cautious to put anything in relation to what happened, because it's been such a big crime that I think humanity has never seen in that scale.
Yeah.
So I think it's really, one should be dangerous with comparing things with it, because it gets inflational after a time. But I think Americans should be very cautious looking at the democratic institutions. This is such a great country. This is such a wonderful, beautiful, large country that has such a rich history. And it has a political system that many people are so proud of because of a reason. Of course, there's always something changing. But in the end, checks and balances, having a Congress, having Senate, having the House of Representatives, having the President, having courts, it's all a big interwoven thing. I think that's democracy in the end, that you always have a moderation in a way. And when you see that people attack these institutions, and when people want to accumulate power to one of those institutions, just to one person, I think then it gets dangerous, because who will control that? He can just suddenly change his mind, do something completely different. And I think that's I watched some Fox News and some other channels. There were like people attacking democratic institutions there. And I think that's it's free speech, of course, and everyone can do what they want. But there's an idea behind it when they do it, I think. And I think we should all be cautious that we protect our democracy before we protect one party over the other.
Country over party is the line here in the United States, and that's what a lot of people on both sides say.
For democracy and for free speech, you need a free press, and it's not working without it. And now we see tendencies where Donald Trump tries to exclude some media companies from reporting about him. So I think you really need to be cautious and take care.
And stick together as a society. because in the end it's the greater cause, right? And yeah. I think nothing is more holy than living together and having rule yourself as a whole. I think that's such a beautiful thing that democracies have, and we should protect that.
I'll finish by asking you, what else do you have in your notes that that you really would like to
pass? After those words, I don't want to say any more facts, just hope.
Just hope.
Hope and love.
Yes. Love,
awesome.
Peace and happiness.
Victoria
Eisenhower,
Daniel Frevel.
Frevel. So
how do you say it?
Something like that. Frevel.
And say the next the chancellor's name now one more time.
Friedrich Merz.
It's like German politics ASMR.
Friedrich
Merz.
Guys, thank you.
Merz.
I'm glad you guys got to experience some Texas too. So we'll have you back anytime.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been great. We love Texas.
Jason, he showed us this beautiful state, and it was
thank you so
amazing.
Much.
Thank you so much.
And the beauty is I've been able to do his work this week while he was showing you all around, which is great.
Thank you for taking so much time.
You owe me one, Wheeler.
Thank you both so much for doing this. It, like I said, it's really great to see things through a different lens, and I think this has really provided that. Safe travels back home.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And next time we do this, we should be in your country.
In Germany.
Absolutely should.
Yes, we will. You are always welcome. Come, and we're glad to show you.
You know, we have Yalitics listeners in Germany.
We do.
We've
have
seen the map.
Now you have two more here.
Yes, absolutely.
And they have beer in Germany, too, so we should be
which
set.
We have as well right
cheers.
Now.
Cheers.
Again,
Prost.
Our thanks to
Prost.
The Manhattan Prost. Project
Prost.
Here in Dallas.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
It was excellent.
Thanks for watching. See you next week.